The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Secure the template. Set the backside guide to appropriate lock set basket. The backside guide tabs include setting the jig. Possessing template. What the hell am I reading?
I can handle things. I'm smart. Not like everybody says. Like dumb. I'm smart. And I want the specs. I'm smart. 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 I'm smart.
I started on a journey about a year ago to a little town called Morrow in the state of Ohio. I've never been much of a traveler, and I really didn't know that Morrow was the hardest place I'd ever try to go. So I went down to the station for my ticket and applied for tips regarding Morrow, not expecting to be guide. Said I, my friend, I'd like to go tomorrow and return, no later than tomorrow, for I haven't time to burn. Said he to me,
"Now let me see if I have heard you right. You'd like to go tomorrow and return tomorrow night. You should have gone tomorrow yesterday and back today, for the train that goes tomorrow is a mile upon its way. If you had gone tomorrow yesterday, now don't you see, you could have gone tomorrow and return today at 3, for the train that goes tomorrow, if the schedule is right, today it goes tomorrow and returns tomorrow night."
Said I, my friend, it seems to me you're talking through your hat. There is a town named Morrow on the line, now tell me that.
There is, said he, but take from me a quiet little tip. Go from here tomorrow is a 14-hour trip. The train today tomorrow leaves today at 8:35. At 10:30 tomorrow is the time it should arrive. So if from here tomorrow is a 14-hour jump, can you go today tomorrow and get back today, you chump?
Said I, I'd like to go tomorrow, so can I go today and get tomorrow by tonight if there is no delay?
Well, well, said he to me, and I've got no more to say. Can you get anywhere tomorrow and get back again today?
Said I guess you know it all, but kindly let me say, how can I get tomorrow if I leave this town today? Said he,
you cannot go tomorrow any more today, for the train that goes tomorrow is a mile upon its way.
I was so disappointed, I was mad enough to swear. The train had gone tomorrow and had left me standing there. That man was right in telling me that I was a howling jay. I could not go tomorrow, so I guess in town I'll stay.
It's time once again to be flabbergasted by the rolling tongue, the juggling of words, thoughts, and phrases, like a Spaniard on a tightrope. Here is the one, the only, the man of 2 hours, Frank Cotolo. Pow! Pow!
Shake that thing.
Cotolo, Cotolo.
Antipasto. Night. No contraction. It is night. Here we are. On the Hallelujah Trail once again. Chronically. My name is Frank Atolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show and has for the past 37, 40 years, whatever it's been now. It certainly feels that long. I am the bard of broadcasting. I am here, there, and everywhere. I'll always be here, even when I'm gone. I'm the vegetable man. I'm the third man, always looking over your shoulders. Stick around. We got lots to say and people to say it with us. To Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello, where as it becomes cooler in the year, they maybe they leave the windows open in the bordellos. Did they do that against a fresh air? Not just that air conditioning. Something about air conditioning that is a lifesaver. And there's something about it that just after a while, I think it gets into your brain or something. It's not, because it's not natural. It is. See? And this guy, you still got to put a little fan down here. Because, even fans, the point I'm trying to make here is that autumn here now, summer gone in most places in this hemisphere. What's it starting to do? It's starting to get summer. Good thing we're not down under. If we were down under, we'd start, it's starting to get warm now in Australasia, but not here. Here. Well, you know, if you're listening in Australasia, well, you know, because it's a morning show. We went through that a couple of weeks ago, didn't we? Oh, didn't we? Maybe a couple of years ago, too. Australia has its own opening for the show. My point being this. Hello. I'm Frank Atolo. And this is going to be a scientific show. Did you make up any words? You know, a couple of people actually made up words and sent me emails. Do you believe this? You better believe it, because this is what I'm telling you to believe. And you should, because it's not going to hurt you not to believe it. You don't have to sue me or anything. Really, last week I was saying let's create our own words, just like they do, creating the words that we hate and don't like anymore. Maybe Oxford, who is it? Willems Oxford? No, the Oxford Dictionary and the, Webster Oxford. Is Webster with Oxford? Never went to Oxford. Oxford's not even where Webster was. Maybe they'll add these words to the human language, the English language, the human language. But here we are again, and we're going to have, I'm talking now, and I'm going to talk at least for an hour with a man named Craig Lehner. Now, as you know, if you don't know, then you're going to hear it now. Over the past couple of months, a wonderful promoter, a guy who's been around, I want to tell you, he's been around for ages, all right? I mean, I'm going to tell you, a man named Erwin Zucker, who is he's just a blast. Erwin Zucker somehow got my number. I think it was the Jaguar. He is going to get so many punches in the face when I see him, and that's just because I like him. Imagine if I didn't like him. But somehow, Erwin Zucker is introducing me to people who are new people for guests. They're not new people. They're not babies just born. Don't take it literally like I do. And tonight, and this is going to be, this should be fun because I don't even know a lot about this guy, no less do I know, but he's an author. You know, he's a writer, so, you know, we have that in common. Craig Leaner, who I'll get him on the Skype here in about 20 minutes or so. But that new Skype, I got to tell you, I'm not happy. I know I get it for nothing. I know that, you know, it is the only and the best way for me to have guests on this show, unless they're live and nobody's going to take planes here, and I'm not planning for anybody, paying for anybody to take planes here. Our mystery guest, of course, I will say this, is recuperating, and our mystery guest will be here one of these weeks when our mystery guest, this person, has recuperated from a bad car accident. So we had to make that arrangement. And the mystery guest was not given to me or by Irwin Zucker. But let's get back to Irwin Zucker. So Craig Leaner, one of the people, in the last minute, something else happened. And I got to Irwin and I said, do you have a guest for me tonight? Because, you know me, all of you. He doesn't know me that well, but you all know me. You give me 2 hours, I'll do 2 hours. Give me an hour and a half. I don't feel like it, I'll do 1 hour 15. Whatever it is I'll do when it's open-ended at the end. And it is until Savino Veritas comes back. So I'll just do it. So Irwin, I said, Irwin, you got anybody? And Irwin goes to work. And I don't know why Irwin goes to work. And I'll tell you, yes, I do. I do. I do know this. Because if the fates prepare me for a life as long as Irwin Zucker, and I didn't know this till tonight when he called up, and I was joking with him because wasn't a joke. It was just a friendly way of saying, you did it again, Irwin. I was stuck for a guest, and there you go. Pulled one right out of your hat. I don't even know if he wears a hat. I don't know where he pulled that out. But maybe Craig could tell us. The thing is that Irwin Zucker, 91 years old. Did you hear that? Did you hear that? Let's hear it again. 91 years old. And he's on the phone pitching for people, getting people spots on podcasts and radio casts and broadcasts and ice casts and shout casts. It's great. 91. And he's in Los Angeles. I think, he has a number. You can't tell where anybody originates when they call anymore, because you can have a New Jersey number be in Arizona. You can have a Colorado number and be in New Brunswick. You could have a Maritimes number and be in the Yukon. Those are places, not necessarily. There's no like Yukon. Welcome to Yukon, USA, or Yukon, Canada. Right? Isn't there a town named Yukon? I don't know. If anyone can, Yukon. That, we know that too, because that's where Rocky and Bullwinkle were born. In any event, in all events, and certainly this event, happy birthday to Irwin Zucker. Because, why? Because I didn't know you before, and if you're 91 now, or maybe he's in his 92nd year, that means, I owe him at least one birthday. Thanks to him, Craig Leaner, will be here, through our Skype. Now, I was talking about Skype. I should not, what do they say? Don't go to the bathroom. Go to the bathroom is that's a euphemism for, either disposing bodily waste, right? I have to go to the bathroom. Instead of saying, I have to dispose of my bodily waste, I have to go to the bathroom. I have to go to the bathroom because, right? That's it. There's many reasons why you'd go to the bathroom. But we say, I have to go to the bathroom. And everyone knows what we mean when we say that. Why did I say that? I said that because why did I say that? I have to go to the bathroom because that's how we say it. My name is Frank Catola, man whose name adorns the title of the show. The book that Craig Leaner wrote is called This Was Never About Basketball. And thank goodness, because I'm not a sports fan anymore. Although, I don't want to get into that. There's plenty of people not listening tonight or not listening on the live stream because of these baseball playoffs. And this is that time of the year when if you're a sports fan, you're nuts because there's football, there's the baseball, there's the hockey, and there's the basketball. All four are going on. And if you have these special, I was going to talk about Skype. That's it. They said you should never go to the bathroom and eat in the same place, right? Well, at the house, they mean in the same room. See, even when they say it, they don't say it exactly. You're supposed to know what they mean. Them. So to Skype. But I think they could have made it a little easier going to Skype 0.8. And again, this is not just me, although I know people who grow up in this digital time immediately catch on to things, and there's stuff you don't have to say to them, and they know how to work stuff. But really, this Skype thing, you know, the new Skype, it could have used a little bit. I already wrote to them, by the way. I wrote to them and said, hey, what is going on with you guys? Tell me how to do this, that, and the other thing. Because it doesn't say. It just assumes you're going to figure it out or you know it. And what, and you know, they catch you too. And you know this too. You know, your Windows and your whatever it is, you, they catch you with all this stuff. Because, you know, they stop supporting it with updates and things at a certain time. So you've got to upgrade. You've got to upgrade. This is something you don't have to do in life any other way. You know when you upgrade with your car, either when you got money and you want to buy a new car, or you have to buy a new car. That's when you upgrade. You don't upgrade because you have to. And cars, you know, cars go out, they go out of term. Let's use that word, that idea. They go out of term. You know, you go to, you're something wrong with your car that's like 20 years old, you bring it to a mechanic, he goes, I can't get that part, I don't make that part anymore. Probably talks like that too. You know me, I have to immediately go into character. That's the mechanic. That's the mechanic today. Tomorrow, another story, another voice. Which is the name of my next book, by the way. Tomorrow, another story, another voice by Frank Cotolo. I want you to go out and get it. It's at Bookmasters, Bam Masters, Bam Books, and Ramadam Books. Go. Go. Buy it. I forgot the title already. I'm never going to get around to writing it. But Skype, I just don't know why these things happen. And you know what? It didn't sound any better. But I need it. I have it. It works like no phone works in my configuration of broadcast equipment. My hardware, my software. This is the way I do it. End of story. That's just how it gets done. And it works giantifically. Oh, there's a word. That was one of the words that Cotolo Chronicles on the vocabulary. Giantific. It means gigantic. It means huge and extra large all at once. It's giantific. You could also say it for, I had this huge, no, you could say I had this giantific bowl of oatmeal this morning. Oh, right? That means it was, you know, it was deep, big, deep. Everything associated with bigness, with largeness, with ness, with thisness and thatness. Chronicling, of course, is what I say all the time. I made that word up a long time ago. Because if you chronicle, you are chronicling. That is another word in there. And if you have a word, I want you to send it to me. Make up a word, or maybe you made up a word before, and you want it as part of the Cotolo Chronicles vocabulary. fcotolo@yahoo.com. Anyone can write to me there. It's okay. But there are wonderful fixes and things that you upgrade or you replace, like my laptop at another location, not where I do this show and stuff, but another location was not the laptop. I take it with me on the road if I'm working and this and the other thing. But it's upstairs from this area. I didn't know anything about Wi-Fi inside of a machine. I don't know, but I didn't even know a laptop works on a battery. I thought it worked on a battery because I had a battery for it when it wasn't hooked up to the electric, right? So, and that battery, because I didn't use it, now that battery needs recharging. What is going on? Remember what I told you a long time ago? If you weren't here a long time ago, I'll tell you now. And that is this. Before the digital stuff began to proliferate, the gadgets, the machines and stuff, the technology itself just advancing. Before that, I said, here's something you should invest in right now. I said, batteries. Invest in batteries. Now, I haven't looked at it, and I'm not a big stock market guy. One time I made a couple of, killings, but that's it. Now, I'm saying, back then I said, get batteries. Why? Because no matter how great this technology becomes, and this is before the smartphone, I said this before the smartphone, said electric and batteries. Batteries, when there's not electric and electric, you're always going to need it. There's no such thing as a computer that works if it's not plugged in or it's got a battery or some kind of charge. You know that from your iPhones. You all have phones. All of you. Some kind of device that you carry with you. And then you go home and you use your phone or you connect to your Android, your iPod, your iPad, right? And then go back to your phone. I don't know. A lot of people don't have towers anymore. You have laptops. A lot of people have laptops. This giant screen I have here, I should use it. I should hook it up to my television set, to my cable. And then I could watch, because my old machine is, my TV is going. How do you know when a digital TV goes anyway? Contrast? And I don't understand a lot of that stuff. I don't want to sound like I'm old because you know I'm not old. I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. So you know that that's not the case, no matter what. So we got all these words at the Cronies vocabulary. See, I'm not even going to put my name on it because it's not like Webster. Webster. Right? They said, what are you going to do with this thing you call a, what are you going to do with this thing you call a dictionary? Ben. Benny, that name wasn't Benny Webster. That was an athlete. I'm way off there. Ben, what was his name? Miriam Webster? No, Miriam is the name of someone else connected to a, Miriam Webster? Wow, well, Daniel Webster, of course, the devil and Daniel Webster. How did I forget that? How could I forget that? I know, you don't know. Fluiding. Fluiding. To replenish your precious bodily fluids. When you replenish your precious bodily fluids, which you should do sometime during this show, whether we break at the hour or not, you should go a fluiding. Now, a fluiding. You put an A in front of anything, right? Go a bike riding. Go a plenty. Get a plenty. You can put a hyphen. Go a fluiding. Okay? How about a smittle, which is a very small or little thing? Smittle. Yeah, we can put words together. We'll make up words that aren't connected to other words, but you know, all words have a root, have a, an origin, whether it's from another language or the same language, correct? Huh? Okay. So, we're going to be talking to, what else did I want to say? See, I told you last week, I said, I don't even know if we're going to remember this, but I kept the page where I was writing them down, because this is where we started. A webucator is a Weber. Oh, a Weber who's an misinformer, somebody who's scamming. A lot of scamming. More scamming going on. The more technology, the more scamming. And of course, as you know, the whole world is under a cyber attack. So there's plenty of jobs for hackers and people who do that kind of stuff. Man, imagine, and a lot of you probably know this. I know you know the bad stuff. I know a lot of you know how to do the bad stuff as well as the good stuff. But I'm not saying you do it. But I know you know it, because you got to know the good stuff in order to do the bad stuff, because otherwise there's no comparison. You'd be doing the bad stuff thinking it's the good stuff. But that's not the way it works. You know how to corrupt. If you know how to create, you know how to destruct. Destroy is the word. If you not listen to this, this is right dish down, said Dr. Fablianic. If you know how to create, you know how to destroy. Okay? All right. So do that. Oh, remember, so you must know the band. I can't imagine. I don't know enough about it being IT, not tech, right? IT, they say, right? You know, I'm an IT man. I'm an IT man. So you don't know that much. So, you know so much about it. I don't know that much about it, the workings, the fibers, the veins, the blood that goes through this this mathematical technology. But people do. So therefore, they know it, so they know how to do other things, like get into someone else's computer, get into someone else's network. Hi, man, that is nuts. I mean, it's bad enough well, it's not bad enough, I guess. A lot of people, things come second nature. I mean, I knew guys and gals and men and women, I mean, young and old, people, people, nouns, I knew nouns, no, people, the people part of nouns, I knew many while I was growing up who just had a knack for things. A knack, K-N-A-C-K. We should call them knackers. Hey, we got one. Here goes another one. The knackers. K-N, write it down. Write this down. Knackers. Let's use O-R-S. Knackers. Knackers are people. I'm writing it down. People who have, you can't define something with a definite, with the word. So I can't hear people have a knack. People who have a natural ability to do something. And now a natural ability means they don't need a lot, if any, teaching. Yet they just know how to do something. They're knackers. So instead of saying, well, he's a knack for that. The kid was five and he sat at the piano, just had a knack for playing the piano. You don't have to say that. You say, yeah, the kid plays the piano. He's a knacker. You're kidding. See, a knackor. O-R. That's a supper waiting to knack. Knackor. So write that. Write that down. That's another one. We have a lot, bunch of words. And I didn't come up with any words during the week, mind you. I was doing a lot of other things, and I'm still doing a lot of other things. But I'm here with you, chronicling. To me, Frank Atola, the man's name adorns the title of the show. Before I get to Craig, who I'm going to call, and then we're going to talk for as long as we can talk. I'm not going to be a difficult historian with that. I got a lot of stories to tell. Oh, also, I want to tell the people who sent in for shows, if you want to hear other shows that I may have in the archives. Bill Crawford's book, Texas Death Row. This was a great show and there's a great book. I think you could still get it on, wherever you get my books, Amazon and other places. Probably Amazon, the main place. Texas Death Row by Bill Crawford, who's we did a show with Bill Crawford about that book. Texas Death Row is great. It talks about people who got killed, because they were sentenced to death at death row in Texas, and what they had, what their last meal, their last meal. What a great idea for a book, and by golly, Bill Crawford did it. That show in April 5th, 2007, why don't you give us 7? Someone asked for that. They said, you know, not the one. They just wrote to me and said, the one, what about the show where you talked about the last thing people ate before they're executed? I went, oh, wow, that's the Bill Crawford book show. And so maybe we could tell some more Bill Crawford books, too, because he's a great writer, a good friend. And I was involved with a book of his. And I might be involved with a project of his if he gets it off the ground. He's already asked. Thank you. On the Hallelujah Trail, my name is Frank Atola. His name is the title of the show. The man we're going to talk to is Craig Leaner. It was very late. If you looked at the blog, you went, where's the blog this week? Where's the blog? Is he on? What's going on with this Catolo guy? And you'll find it. It was really late that I got it on there. So if you saw the blog, you'll see a picture of Craig and his book. We're going to talk. No, you're not going to see a picture of his book. You'll see a picture. Now let's see if this is going to work, because this is the new Skype. Skype 8.8, I don't know, 0.8 something. And look at this. It's unbelievable. I just start the call. All right, now I'm going to do this even though it's got a translator. What does that mean? Oh, my God. I'm going to call him. Listen, this is, oh, my God, it's loud. Wow. Wow.
Hello.
Wow.
Hello, Craig Leaner here.
Craig Leaner.
Hello, Frank. I would like to spend the next hour listening to you rail against technology some more.
Were you listening?
Oh, yeah.
We could talk about technology. You could talk with me for an hour. In fact, we could even talk a little more if you don't have anywhere to go, because you're my only guest.
Yeah, I'm just hanging out. That's fine.
Good. We'll just talk until we don't want to talk anymore.
By the way, Jiggy Jaguar refers to this operating system as the Skyperoo. Are you aware of that?
I knew you knew, Jiggy. I have to. No, I'm not. I'm not. I know that Jiggy lends, borrows various things I say, and I'm happy to be a mentor to Mr. Jaguar. Jaguar. That's what he says, Jaguar. I don't even know why he pronounces what he pronounces. What does he call it? The Skype-oo? What?
The Skyperoo.
The Skyperoo. Boy, I'm telling you, there's just no ending to the creative things that come out of his mouth. Jiggy Jaguar. How are you, Craig?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's still light out here in Southern California. I'm just hanging out at the house.
I love Southern California. And many, I have many connections. I lived in, this is not, you're not interviewing me, so don't worry about it. I'm just saying. Where are you, in Los Angeles?
I'm in Chatsworth, in the San Fernando Valley.
Chatsworth, the San Fernando Valley, of course. Chatsworth, and let me make this, are you near Sherman Oaks?
Yeah, I actually was born and raised in Sherman Oaks, and it's about a 9-iron from here.
Okay, so there's that. Oh, you were born and raised there.
Yes, sir.
And now you live in Chatsworth?
That's correct.
So I know the area. Well,
where did you frequent, or did you live out this way?
When I lived out in, I lived in a couple of places in Los Angeles, and I had friends in the Valley, and I went to the Valley many times. I don't know what's there anymore. You know, Saturday night in the Valley used to be, there used to be all these wonderful little bars. We used to hang out in these bars. I don't know if any, is the, wait, I'm trying to think of one. It was called the, it was, wait, in French, it's the Left Bank. The Rive Gauche. Is the Rive Gauche still there?
I believe it is.
Wow. That.
Yeah, it's an institution here in the San Fernando Valley.
The Rive Gauche is still there. That is amazing that some of these places have existed. Okay. Well, back to you, Craig. Thanks to, well, no thanks to Jiggy Jaguar, but thanks to, the wonderful Irwin Zucker. You got mixed up with Irwin. How'd you get mixed up with Irwin?
Well, I joined his organization, the Book Publicists of Southern California, and he took a liking to me, actually, and became my de facto book publicist. And he's been getting me gigs all over the place. Irwin, well, I don't know if I should say this, but I will. He considers me to be the Hamiltonian of young adult basketball literature.
The what?
Hamiltonian.
Are you kidding? Are you kidding? You use the word Hamiltonian?
Of young adult basketball literature, and I'm pretty sure he was referring to the father of the American Trotter, that was foaled in 1792.
Absolutely. You don't know anything about my connections, but of course but obviously that, if you say that to me, I am going to know about it because I'm thoroughly ensconced and have been for years in the sport. So he calls you, so he knows it. You know why? Because he's 91.
Yeah, he's every bit of 91. He's a wonderful man. He's crusty.
Oh.
He gets angry easily, but he's just the nicest guy, and he'll give you the shirt off his back.
I'm working on an impression. When he calls me up, Frank, my voice is still too high for my age. Okay, Craig, let's talk about you. Now, I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I left sports behind in my life, okay? It's gone. It's been gone for quite a while. And I have many reasons for why it's gone. But one main reason of a man my age. So you're going to have to tell me things like for instance, last night someone said, watch the Oakland A's. Cause back when I did follow baseball, I was a big Oakland A fan because they changed the sport, the Charlie Finley and the gang there. Okay. That was like, I like that kind of stuff, So I'm watching this baseball game, this playoff game, this one-game playoff game, and I don't know anyone. I don't know one player. And I have to have it on the background and do something else because I am thoroughly bored.
Yeah, baseball's not the fastest sport as it is, and if you don't know who's on the field, it probably becomes even less fun at that point.
Well, I don't know. I have a worse excuse for it, so I want you to... You know, I'm not, There's nothing disparaging about this. I'm just trying to tell you that you're going to have to tell me certain things when we start talking about your book, even though it was never about basketball, but the word basketball is there. So, and you mentioned it before, and now you've connected it with me by saying the Hamiltonian of basketball teachers. Did you say teacher?
Well, actually I said young adult basketball literature.
Young adult, and that's it. Okay. So we do have something very close in common. We're both authors. Okay.
That is correct.
But, and to play a sport is all I would ever do, even though I can't do it the way I used to do it. And even when I was doing it, I didn't like watching it as much. You know why? Because, I'll tell you this right away, I don't like passive things. Never liked being a member of an audience, or it's very difficult for me to do so. That's a very passive thing, being a sports follower, right?
Mm. Yep, it is.
And basketball, of all the sports I ever played, everyone, a few times I played, it was all on the street and in a gym in high school, my junior high school. And everyone was better than me in basketball. And, I just don't, never want to put the work in to be better. So that didn't make me a very good sports player. And I didn't have coaches who you could call, sterling examples of athletic people. So tell us a little bit about you and your relationship to sports out there in Southern Cal.
Well, I got a love of basketball in the 60s. My parents donated some money they didn't have at the time to help build Pauley Pavilion when there was a big fund drive underway,
okay,
and that's where UCLA plays.
Hold on. Say that again, because I don't think anybody caught the name of that. Say it slowly.
Pauley Pavilion on the campus of UCLA.
Okay, there you go, kids. Okay, fine.
Yeah. And so that enabled them to buy two tickets for themselves, mid-court, nice seats, and then buy four up in the rafters. And so my sister and brother and I took turns taking someone to the game. So I went to every single home game at UCLA from the day that place opened until I found other things to do in about 1974. And I saw every dynasty, every win, every championship. And, boy, that instilled a love of the game in that moment.
So it was the fact that you were a part of this. What invigorated you about all this?
I view life through the prism of basketball. In my experience, you learn about the people you're with on the court by seeing how they react to stressful situations that come up. Do they shoot? Do they pass? Do they bounce the ball off their foot and out of bounds? And over time, I found personally I just had a better understanding of how the world came together and how all the parts moved.
So you had to learn the sport. Who taught you the sport? Did you learn it just by watching it?
By watching it, and then I got into some youth basketball through the YMCA when I was like 9 or 10 years old. Uh-huh. And I just stayed in youth basketball until I got into high school. Went to Van Nuys High, went here in the San Fernando Valley.
Sure, Van Nuys, yeah.
I played B basketball and then JV and then my varsity season when I was a senior. And I considered myself to be the 13th best basketball player on a team of 13 players.
Yeah, I read that. I'd be the 14th.
Yeah, so I was actually voted the most inspirational player on the team. I did the best impressions on the bus and kept the guys loose. And I got in at garbage time, but boy, it sure was an important part of my life growing up. And I made a lot of friends that I still have today.
So here's this game. Relate this game to life. How did you relate to life through this game? And this is not a game that you did. In other words, did you say like, well, I'm going to get paid for doing this one day and I'm going to be playing basketball. I mean, how do you get, what were you thinking?
Well, boy, it's a pretty subtle thing. When you're playing a sport, there are the rules and then there are certain ways you can sort of bend the rules a little bit to your favor. And then there's the part about bending the rules where you cross over a line. And I've always found it to be a way to measure a person's level of integrity by how they conduct themselves.
In a sport or in that sport?
Well, in that sport in particular, you can certainly do it in other sports as well. But basketball is what I know best.
When I played at any kind of basketball at all, and I was forced to in junior high school in New York, where I grew up in New York. And everybody broke the rules in order to either get a shot or get the ball. I was never in a game where there was a referee who supported the rules. You know?
Yeah, okay.
I was hurt a lot. And so my experience was like, hey, come on. And a lot of these guys were bigger. They were tall. I was, you know, I'm not that tall, too. And so those guys were always had it over me. And I mean, as I see, I mean that in as a metaphor also, right?
Right.
How tall are you?
I'm about 6'1".
Okay, well, you see, now, were you always, now you say, were you always 6'1"? No. Yes, it was a very difficult birth.
Yeah, well, in high school, I think I was around 5'11 or 6 feet.
Okay, so there, all right, so you grew up, and that gave you an edge, right?
Yeah, a little bit of an edge, and I wasn't tall enough to be a starting forward and not quick enough to be a guard, so I, you know, I was on the, on the third team, actually.
I don't even know the positions. I never, knew the positions. See, when I was playing basketball, laying down was the position I took because I was knocked over and you know, it was not easy for me, but so you had an edge and it's not a little edge.
It was a considerable. My parents actually, threw some concrete in the backyard and hung up a hoop. And so we were shooting in the backyard under lights all summer long when I was a young teen. And so, I had some advantages and I made the most of them. I think I really tried to leverage all of that opportunity and get better and understand the game better.
What was the shortest? So you played with tall people, right? I mean, what's the average height to be a good basketball player when you're growing up?
Well, average height, I don't know. It's probably something like around 6'2 or 6'3. And if anybody who's 6'6 or 7 or taller usually has a pretty big advantage. We had a couple guys on our team that were, there was one guy 6'5, another guy about 6'7. So we had a good team, went to the quarterfinals of the city playoffs before we got derailed.
Who's the shortest kid? Give him.
We had a guy probably about 5'9", but he was, our starting point guard. Boy, is he tough too.
5'9".
Yeah, he had a, you know, chip on his shoulder at that height, and he had a lot to prove, and it made him a really tough opponent.
I never had a chance. I never had a chance, and it's because of physiology. Right? I mean, I couldn't have fallen in love with this game. Do you, okay, so you played, and did you answer that question? What did you think you were going to do? Go on in life and just play basketball until you couldn't, you know, stand anymore? And get paid for it? What were you thinking?
Oh, boy. You know, well, bring it really quickly to present day. My doctor has a term for me going out and playing ball right now. He calls it pre-op. you know, I knew that before I graduated high school. I didn't have a future in playing the game. But I got in some leagues, some intramural ball. And then I started to just to follow what I coached. I did some refereeing and then eventually did some writing about it. You know, I drifted after I graduated from college into the entertainment industry. I worked in film operations at Warner Brothers.
Oh, okay.
And at Disney. And then from there, I found myself one day the president of the company came in at a post-production company I was working at and said, how'd you like to be in human resources? And I thought he was kidding me because I thought that was a cool gig. So I moved into human resources management for the last 25 years. But during that, I also worked as a sports journalist for the local newspaper up in Santa Clarita, which is a little bit north of Los Angeles.
Is that where the pods were in the invasion of the body snatchers? Is that Santa Clarita, or did they make up on? Wasn't that Santa Clarita?
Boy, you know, I don't know the answer to that one. I'm going to say, give you a qualified yes.
You talked about, you were in movies, and you don't know the invasion of the body snatchers. Santa, well, anyway, doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, because they were probably short aliens anyway.
So, yeah, just have one of your staff look that up real quick. You have your producer check that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's get one of those guys. Hey! They'll be back. They're on a break. So listen.
Yes, sir.
So you're following basketball is part of your life no matter what you're doing for a living or anything, right? As you're moving along, you're going even when you're writing sports, or you're just writing about basketball, you're writing about the Lakers, you're writing about what are you writing about when you get into journalism?
The newspaper I worked at, I was writing about high school sports and a little bit of the local JC situation up there. I did spend a couple of days covering the Angels for the newspaper, an opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, it took me the longest to write a game story than anybody in the history of the stadium. I was the last guy in the park, and security had to come up and escort me out because I didn't really understand the concept of, you know, writing on deadline. So it was an interesting experience. Yeah, so I would write about all sports, but basketball was always my love.
Wow. And who in the game, so I'm sure I'll know a name or two. I don't know. You never know. People's heroes are, sometimes are off the beaten track. Who is your favorite all-time professional basketball player and why?
Boy, a couple of them, I guess I'll start with Pete Maravich.
No, wait, let's not go on a couple. I want the one. I want the top
guy. I love Pistol Pete. In fact, my protagonist in my book, Ezekiel Archer, otherwise known as Zeke, well, he's a bit modeled after Pete Maravich. Pete came out of LSU.
Pete Maravich is the name, right?
In fact, Pistol Pete Maravich.
Who did Pistol Pete play for?
Played for LSU, and then when he got into the NBA, he played for Atlanta Hawks, and he bounced around for like maybe four or five other teams.
He bounced around. That's cute.
Yeah, that's a good sports term for you. You know, he grew up, his father was a coach, and he used to, legend had it, he would spin a basketball on his finger until his finger bled. And he was in the gym 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And he could do things with a basketball that were just amazing.
Go. It's just that when you said that, I immediately thought of the Globetrotters.
Yeah, he could have easily played for the Globetrotters, but he had an interest in establishing himself in the NBA.
Do you know why were the Globetrotters ever a real team, or were they always a theatrical unit?
Yeah, they were always a theatrical unit.
Why?
That was what they wanted to do. That was their role. Back then it was hard for Black Americans to go out and just, carve their way into the NBA. So they had to establish their own company and draw in fans to the best of their ability.
And they were better than just about anyone, right? They could beat any of those. They would have always been the champs, right? They would always have won. Or did they break all the rules doing all that stuff?
Yeah, all of the above. They always had the game against the team called, I think it was called the Washington Generals. And they would beat them almost every single time. But it wasn't really a game so much as it was just a lot of theater and a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I watched that kind of stuff because it was more theatrical and clowning. And the only thing I could say about sports, as far as watching sports, is the only thing I could say about it. And that is that it's live. And if you watch it on TV, it's live. Nothing's live anymore, right? Nothing. Is anything live? I don't know when it comes to entertainment. So you never know what's going to happen. That makes it good theater. Let's get back to what we said there. So obviously you're going to write. We'll get to the book. We have plenty of time. We'll get to the book and other writings in a second here. This is, let me just tell everyone, it's Craig Leener. Now there's no A in that. It's L-E-E-N-E-R. And, you can look at the book at Amazon, or you can go, is the website called the same as the title of the book?
Yes, it is.
Okay. The book is called This Was Never About Basketball. Which, of course, caught my eye because I didn't want to read anything about basketball. And meeting Craig, a fellow writer, and the Hamiltonian of... he could be the secretariat of...
Well, no. I wanted to really focus it on harness racing.
About harness racing? Can I ask you that just right now?
Not a great deal. My dad took me to a few races when I was a kid. I was fascinated by how those horses and the... Boy, what's that thing called? The basket? It starts with an S, right?
Sulky.
The sulky. How it just sort of moves along the track, and it's mesmerizing. It's like hypnotic. So I enjoy going to the race. I think I might have won a couple of bucks when I was like 12. I don't know a lot about it, but I always enjoy watching it on TV when it comes on. And, of course, a couple times I've seen it live.
You were going in California, so then you were going to only the vague few places, but the few places that had harness racing back then. Hollywood Park.
I think Los Alamitos might have been the place I went to.
I spent many and many a night in Los Alamitos. But
I have no doubt about that, Frank.
Right. So there, I don't have to prove it. I'm a difficult historian, says my doctor. So the hell with him. Back to you. And that is, what were we talking about? We're talking about you, back to journalism. You get into journalism. And, we got your favorite basketball player. And then what? How did you stay connected to basketball as you were going through all these other things? You said you were in leagues. Did they have leagues in at MGM or Warner Brothers? Did Warner Brothers have a basketball team?
When I worked at Disney, they had a league. And my first year, I played on the team, and we won the championship, and my parents were in the crowd for it. That was a lot of fun. So, yeah, there's leagues within the studios and park leagues where you go to a local park and play with your friends. So I kind of drifted out of that and then sort of semi-retired, I guess, and stepped away after running a post-production company for a handful of years. And like all writers who like to write, we all feel like we have a book in us. And you've been through this, Frank. And so I thought I'd finally make good on the threat.
Well, you know, I don't. You said something important there, because I always contest that people always say, even when you're not writers, people go, you know, I got a book in me, I could write. Everyone thinks they could write at least one book, you know. And I've heard that just by so many people. Oh, I had stories I could tell you about whatever, that when I was in North Korea, whatever it was, I could write a book. I could do it. What? And they, you know, they can't do it. You can't. Not everyone does not have a book in them.
Well, a lot of people think they do.
And, yeah, exactly. You know.
Camp and so
but we do, we have books. I got plenty more in me. How about you?
Well, I'm working on the sequel right now. I'm about maybe almost halfway through the first draft on it.
Okay, this was your first novel?
Yeah, I wrote it. I published it about a year and a half ago.
Okay, let's get into this then about young, because you're the Hamble's owner, young adult. That market has to do with your experience, because we all write from our experiences one way or another. So how did you, that market, I don't know anything about that market other than it's flooded with the material. It's, wow, that's a big market. And I don't know these days how that works, because publishing has changed so much, and so have young adults. What about, why did you go to that market?
You know, I was putting the story together in my head, and I went out to dinner with my wife and my son. And I was telling him about what my idea was, and he said to me, it sounds like a young adult book.
How old is your son?
He is 37.
And when you told him this, he was what?
About like 34 or so.
Oh, okay. So he told you it was, okay.
Yeah, I have a really smart kid. He's a working artist and a really good guy.
That must be nice to have a smart kid.
he's a lot smarter than me.
I'm hoping my kids are listening, because I tease them all the time. Go ahead.
So he told me that, and I really needed, I went onto Wikipedia the next day and looked up what a young adult book was, because, you know, in specific, because I really didn't know.
Sure.
So I started to read books on how to write a book, and I read 8 different books before I even started.
Oh, boy.
Books on character development, dialogue, sure. Plot and structure.
Sure.
The brain science of storytelling, and that kind of thing, and including Dr. James Naismith's biography, which was really insightful. Then I started to craft a story, started to outline the story, and I really didn't have any direction, and I had my protagonist robbing a liquor store, getting with the wrong crowd. I had no idea what I was doing. Then something happened. I was at a funeral for a friend of mine's mom. Now, this is a guy that I actually played against in high school and didn't really know him. 20 years later, we're working for the same company. So, but the basketball connection is that we started talking. We couldn't believe that. And then about 25 years after that, his mom passes. We're at the mission, one of the 21 California missions. This one's in San Fernando, up here in the valley, in the Chapel of Ease. And it was a really long Catholic funeral. And so it goes on and on and on. And you know, I know I can't look at my cell phone because that's not cool. If I close my eyes, well, who knows what would happen, you know. So I looked up at this walnut carving behind the pulpit, and it's a walnut carving of the religious history of the world that was created in Spain in the 1600s. At some point, it was unpacked or carted off to New York, unpacked, and then sent to California, ended up on the mission wall, and who knows what kind of backroom deals took place. So I looked up at this thing, closed my eyes, and I said to my own self in my head, I'm really struggling with my story right now. What do you got for me? I had a really elevated level of expectation. And I paused and I waited, and I heard these 5 words in my head come from somewhere, and those words were, they're taking the game away. And in that moment, I had my story. I went home and feverishly started to outline the kitchen table on a 3.5 by 4 foot piece of builder's paper on a Sharpie. And about 5 days later, I had my story fully outlined, all 8 points of the story arc, and on the sixth day, or I guess maybe on the eighth day or seventh day, which would be more poetic, I wrote my first chapter, never having written a book before. It took about 5 hours, and I just pounded it out, and that's how it started.
That's a good story. Writers all have those kind of stories when I can't tell you how many times something comes to me in the weirdest place. I never give credit to the position or where I am when it happens, because I find over, this is your first book. I mean, this can happen over again and again and again. You'll be in the weirdest spots and you'll go, whoa, of course, it's that. That's what happens. Everybody has a different way of writing. That's why I've been, you know, doing this one way or another since I was like, you know, since I could write a word. So, I didn't just start writing, period. That's good. What happened to you? It means that, you have to listen to yourself. And there you are. You listen to yourself and the book came to you. And once you had it, you pretty much had it all in your head. Even I don't know how anybody makes outlines. I've never been able to do that. I'm like Philip Roth, you know. I have an idea and I sit down and somehow it all works itself out, you know.
Well, God love you, Frank. If I did it that way, I'd still be writing that book.
Well, your first book, and that's the other thing that people, that writers think, and I always tell writers when they're on the show, or when wannabe writers or people, whatever, and they say, like, you know, I'm going to write, and a lot of people come to me, friends of wives of husbands of things, you know, say, you know, I really had this idea for a book, and they ask me, or they write something, and they give it to me, and I'm always telling them, you know, if the most difficult thing to do if you want to start being a writer is to take on a book. I mean, you know, have you written a short story or anything? But, you know, and you're very fortunate to have gotten through a novel. Is it a novel or a novella? How many words you got?
It's about 62,000 words. It is a novel.
Yeah, you're in novel area. To be able to put together 62,000 words without gigantic holes and, you know, everything having, you know, the movement of your story and characters, it is remarkable for the first thing you do as a writer. That's up. But you've already been writing. So you were a journalist. It's not like you didn't write. You had elements in your head about writing that you knew, because it's just, you know, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say that there are parts of this book, when I look at it sometimes, I don't remember writing it. It just sort of came through me somehow out my fingers.
Wait till you have more books. You will just be amazed. You'll look back and go, did I write that? Because I would have wrote it differently. Or what? That's the whole thing. You know, is it ever perfect or what have you? So that's great. And how long did it take you to finish this particular book then?
First month, draft was about 7 months. And then after that, about 8 months to do the editorial and design work.
You did your own editorial. You did your own design work. Yeah.
No, sir. Actually,
no, you didn't. I'm sorry.
I did a deep dive, research, and found a very, very skilled young adult book editor on the East Coast named Judy Gittenstein, 45 years in the young adult book industry, retired, working out of her Manhattan apartment, takes on small clients. And I contacted her, and, because I found her on the internet, and I got an email back from her a couple of days later saying, sounds like an interesting manuscript. Send it to me.
She had to, wait a second. She was going to design the book and she had to know what it was about. I mean, what?
No, she was the editor, my editor.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I gave her some of the key points of what it was about. And then, you know, never having done this before, the person says, yeah, send it to me. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. Send it to you.
Yeah.
So leap of faith, I sent it, and I got an email back about 3 days later saying, this is a very good first draft. I can work with this. So she did my editorial. She did the developmental edit and the line edit, the two really important parts at the beginning. She led me to a copy editor, a guy named Christopher Keynes on the East Coast. He did the copy edit. And then Judy hooked me up with a guy named Marco Pavia here in Los Angeles, and he did the design work. So he arranged for the interior and exterior design. He built my file and he uploaded it up to Amazon, and he also created my website for me.
What about your experience with editors right off the bat? Did you feel that they had they have something over you because this was your first book or what have you? Or did they, did they make some suggestions and you went, whoa, 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 whoa? I mean, what was your relationship? Was it educational? Did you look at it as educational? Or did you have any conflict with them?
You know, fortunately, I'm wise enough to know that it was important to check my ego at the door. You know, I didn't take every piece of advice she gave me. Like some things I just said no. And not real big stuff, you know, but things I just wanted to hang into that were important to me. But by and large, though, every suggestion she made was a really good one. And, man, she really guided me through the process. She was just a wizard and a great, great editor.
That's good. I think as you move on, you may find, not because of ego, but probably because of the confidence you have in your voice as a writer, you're going to find less and less useful things that other people are going to say about, you know, about your books. I mean,
She found like plot holes and some things I were doing that she referred to as disrespecting the reader, where I would say something that the reader should already know or maybe I kept the reader in the dark about something, and she pulled me up short on that kind of stuff.
Now, she is, and wasn't a specialist or is a specialist in this market.
Well, yeah. I mean, she worked on young adult and children's books. She also edited other kinds of books as well, but I think this was her specialty.
Yeah.
And I capitalized on that, on her knowledge. She really knew what she was doing, man, every word.
Because the market really shouldn't affect the flesh and blood of anything, any novel. I mean, it just should go one way or another. But anyway, we're not here to teach everybody out there about writing. They know. They've heard enough crap from me over the years. But it's fascinating for me to talk to somebody who is going through this for the first time, and it's a book. Because I don't think there's many people like you.
Well, I mean, everybody who writes had to write the first one at some point. But I think you're right, especially this late in life, maybe. You know, one of the tips I got from these many books that I read was, before you start, tell everybody you know that you're writing a book, because you have nowhere to run at that point.
Wow. For a first book? Wow. That's, okay. So it's a committal. It's a commitment there, right?
Leap of faith and a commitment. And it's sort of keeping yourself in check and saying, hey, you committed to this thing. Let's keep going.
Wow. Okay. That's something. I can't remember. I literally cannot remember sitting down and having any compunction or fear or anything of the empty page. It's been cursed, in fact. It's a curse.
Well, talk about charm life, Frank. You know, one of the ways I tap a writer's block, which comes up every now and then, is a couple years ago for my birthday, my wife asked me what I wanted, and I jokingly told her I'd like a basketball court in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So, darn it, she didn't arrange to build one. It's like a third scale court back there with an NBA sized backboard. And when I get stuck, I go back there and shoot free throws, and I get myself into a rhythm, which kind of translates into a word rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say that I am an 87% free throw shooter in the backyard, with the caveat that it is 100% unverified.
Well, you're tall.
Yeah, there's no one around to do the counting but me, and so you have to take it on faith.
Hey, did you ever meet somebody who was like as tall as you or taller and just couldn't play?
Yeah, all the time.
Really? Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. More people don't play than play. And people like that, they say I'm a waste of height.
A waste of height. I like that. Yeah, there's always jargon, isn't there? There's always jargon. Pop culture finds its way into everything, no less pop sports, because that's a pop thing. Is there any reason why, and this is people going to ask you all the time, and I hate people ask me this, because you know what you have to do. I you always have to come up with like an outline, not an outline, but a paragraph or a couple of words, a couple of sentences. Of course, outlines later on. No publishers are not going to look not going to sit down and read every book, no less read every two chapters or whatever. So they want to, you know, your outline. I hate all that stuff. It just drives me nuts, because I do it after, you know, I can't do it before. In one paragraph speaking, how would you tell somebody like me. I mean, I'm not against reading any kind of book. I don't care what genre it might be. What would you say to me, that would be universal about this book that would make me want to read it?
Oh, I'd probably tell you a couple thoughts about it. I could say that this is never about basketball. It's a coming-of-age story of friendship and redemption, which are key topics for young people. Mm-hmm. And it's seen through the eyes of Ezekiel, Zeke Archer. He is a well-intentioned but troubled teen. So compelled by his passion for basketball, he overcomes extreme odds, triumphs in the face of his biggest challenge, which is saving the game of basketball for all of humanity.
For all of humanity. This is a... I read one or two of the reviews. Now that you're mentioning it, there's something to do. This is kind of it's with science fiction in this, right?
Yeah, I created. There's an aspect of what's called magical realism in the book, where fantastical things are happening in the story, but they seem really normal to the kids in the story.
Okay.
I created what I refer to as an interdimensional energy being, and I named it the seventh dimension.
Okay.
And this is an entity that. That brought basketball to Earth in 1891 through Dr. James Naismith, with the goal to foster peace and brotherhood amongst mankind. Yeah, so the novel contains elements of magical realism and embraces what I refer to as unifying social themes that transcend differences and focus on the foundational qualities of basketball, which are, in my experience, teamwork, integrity, I'll throw in respect, and choosing to do the right thing. So that was what I would tell you to entice you to, you know, take a look at it.
Bouncing has nothing to do with it. And this, of course, now kind of explains to me without reading it, but I mean, I think I understand what, maybe I'm wrong, because I do that. I mean, everything in my book, whatever, names mean stuff, but I think, is this why you found Ezekiel, the name that you wanted to use?
Boy, you know, Ezekiel came from, you know, being an LA Laker fan, we had an announcer out here called Chick Hearn.
Yeah, Chick Hearn. Now, there's a name I knew.
Yeah, he was a Laker announcer for, I don't know, boy, sure. 3 or 4 decades. And the Lakers had a player named Jerry West.
Yeah, Jerry West, right, okay. I remember.
And Chick used to call him, he nicknamed him Zeke from Cabin Creek. Now, Jerry West was not from Cabin Creek. He was from a little town not too far from there. But I always thought Zeke was a cool basketball name. And so I decided right away that I would call my character Zeke.
Oh, okay. So it does. It has no biblical reference. I mean, it does.
I understand that it is attached to the Bible, but that's not why I used it.
Wow. Okay. Well, then you see how great things happen. I think that somewhere a reviewer is going to find this. You know, Ezekiel comes up in lots of things that. Did you ever hear of Derek Von Donegan?
Yes, I have.
In his stories about swearing that aliens came here, he points to parts of Ezekiel talking in the Bible as saying, like, yeah, he met, because Ezekiel met the aliens, according to Von Donegan, in Chariots of the Gods and stuff. So he points to parts. And Ezekiel, I always remembered Ezekiel connected to aliens through him.
Oh, wow. I think I inadvertently tripped onto that.
Yeah, these things do happen. I try not to let them happen. I mean, I try to make them happen in my books. I never pick a name that is just cool or anything. I mean, I look for all the levels. And, you know, you might like to, or maybe that's something that your editor would say, hey, this is for young adults, all right? So don't do that. I don't know the territory. For young adults, what is the demographic of as defined in young adult literature?
Generally speaking, it's considered to be 12 to 18 year old people, and my take on my book is that it works well for regular adults, and including those who aren't related to me, but also said they liked it. So, the 12 to 18 is the core audience for it.
12 to 18, so different than what 12 to 18 was, I guess, when you and I don't know, and I'm not going to ask you. I mean, but when you were 12 to 18, I'm wondering how many 12 to 18s, you raised a kid, so. But now, I mean, right now you're selling this book. 12 to 18-year-olds, they're still, this is still something to expose the millennials, not millennials, 12 to 18 would be Gen X, would be the next generation, right?
Yeah, you know, and these days, boy, it's a competitive market, and there's a lot of kids with a phone or an iPad, and they're not reading a lot of books. And so, you know, I'm just, I'm writing, and I'm doing and working it every day, but I always have doubts about the size of the audience, frankly.
Yeah, I'm talking about the audience now. Do you know, have you looked at other books for 12 to 18? I mean, you read all these books about writing a book, but in this genre, I wouldn't know what to do if I just said, "Oh, here, I'm going to write in this particular genre, this particular one you're talking about." Kids 12 to 18 are like way different than we'd experience, I would think. I know that they are, right?
Yeah, certainly. And there are young adult authors who are very popular and almost I have like a cult-like following. When they publish a book, it sells millions. There's a handful of guys or people, you know, who do that. John Green being one of them, for example. And boy, when he publishes a book, you know, you got to take a place online to get a copy.
Yeah, I find, you know, every week, someone hands me a newspaper because, you know, there aren't many newspapers around anymore. And certainly I don't get any. And they show the top 10, fiction. I don't know what, I guess that's is the New York Times the only one who does a top 10 fiction list or what?
I think other publications, I read it in the LA Times, but I think they have the New York Times' analysis of that.
Yeah, I understand that. And whatever that's based upon. And, you know, you're always going to find three, four, five same names. Half of it, 50% of it's going to be the same names. I imagine in genres, obviously that's going to be the case too, if you categorize it in genres. So you know these people, and so do the young people. But young people get old, and other generations have to come along. So whatever these guys and gals, I don't know, there might mostly gals there too, because, right, aren't they, it's not just boys.
Right, and I think that there are more girls reading young adult books than there are boys, and mine might be written a little bit more for boys because of the sports aspect of it and the main character being a guy.
What about, hey, there's a good thing, there's a good topic, because I see, like, when they do the, you know, the March Madness thing, of course, do you know? I'm asking you. You know that? Did you ever hear that? Of course.
Yeah, it's a vague recollection of it.
From whence many people understand what the word bracket means. But, you know, there's a lot of girls that, right, the girls are playing more than ever, doing that, correct? When did that get rolling? When were girls, cause you were in colleges and stuff like that, when did girls start becoming, organized in school and basketball? That doesn't go back that far, does it?
It's going to go back at least a couple of decades, maybe 25, 30 years or so.
Yeah, I know. I always hate to think that's, you know, when someone says, "Frank, that was 25 years ago." And I say, "Oh, geez." I'm getting like, "Geez, you're still 1995." It's like, "Whoa, like to you, that's long? That's nothing." So then it really is in the history of the sport and the sport in higher institutions. It's young.
Yeah. It's the youth that drive the sport. You know, people have to come up from somewhere, and all these youth leagues that are going on and club teams and a lot of high school activity. This is the wellspring where, that feeds the colleges and the pros.
But not the girls.
Well, the girls too. There is a WNBA and, you know, they have a very healthy league.
I did not know this. Wait, there's a professional female basketball league?
Yes, sir. They just had their championship about 3 weeks ago or so. And there is, of course, almost every college that has a men's team has a women's team as well. And a lot of that's by law, that if you carry one, you have to carry the other.
I didn't know this. Well, now, are they drawing? Who are they drawing? Who's their audience?
Well, it's family and friends for sure. You know, the crowds at those games are a lot smaller.
Yeah.
It's not hard to get a ticket. But boy, I'll tell you something, the game doesn't get any more pure than when young girls, women, you know, college, high school teams get on the court because their fundamentals are very strong. They're very, very committed to what they're doing on the court. It's the pure game right there.
That's a fascinating, to me, that's fascinating what you're saying. So it's pure, which means that, so then the boys is a little stained Well, I mean, how do you know, you're saying that's pure, not like those boys. I mean, what do you mean? What's the comparison?
Well, you know what, the boys might be doing a little bit more one-on-one, like maybe slightly less teamwork going on the court.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
Maybe a little more showboating, a little more sort of playing to the crowd. Mm-hmm. And I think that the women do that nearly as much.
Wow. So how do you follow the female professional leagues? I mean, that cities have teams or what? I mean, I don't know anything about this now. I didn't even know this existed.
Yeah, I don't have that at my fingertips, but there's about a dozen teams or so. I know there's one here in L.A. called the Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in Phoenix. I think there's one in Indianapolis, and there's some on the East Coast as well.
I love learning new things, even if I'm not going. That's going to come up somewhere in conversation, and I'm going to look smart. And God knows I need to look smart.
Yeah, make a note to look that up after we're done here, friend.
I am. I'm writing it right this time. I'm writing yours down right now, as Dr. Fabianic told me to. Women's, we'll call it women's, right? Because they have to be what? Professionals. What about age of the professionals? Women's basketball, professional basketball league.
I'm sure there's some women who come into the league right out of high school, but I think primarily the colleges feed those teams. So I imagine women come into the NBA, or sorry, the WNBA, probably in their early 20s for the most part.
Well, there are young adults who would read your book now, or what? Would they? Sure.
I don't see why they wouldn't. That's my position. You know, you're an author. You know that you got to spend every waking minute promoting your book, because you know that no one's going to care more about it than you. And if you take your eye off the ball or rely too much on somebody else, it's going to be a really expensive lesson.
Yeah, that's tough for me, because I go from one to another in, like, it's hardly a, I don't even know if a week goes by. In fact, you know, I have a book, and I've done a whole show with titles of books I will never write, because I'm just not going to live 3,000 years. I have titles. And as I'm doing, and when I'm doing my show, you might have heard me. If you were listening early on, I came up with a title. You know, you write it right down. There's a book I'll never write. I come up with the title. Titles are very big with me. So let's talk about this title. This was never about basketball. Now you've given us an idea. Here's your main character. He's out to save basketball from whatever force is going to take basketball away, the founders of basketball, from other planet, right? Did I get it?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, well, that's pretty close. He's a 17-year-old basketball star, high school star. He's got a sweet jump shot, a full-ride scholarship to a Midwestern basketball powerhouse, which in this case is the University of Kansas, and a really bright future. But his temper got the better of him in the city championship game, and someone took a cheap shot at one of his teammates, and he lost his temper, committed an act of violence. He was expelled from school, had to forfeit his scholarship, and he was left to ponder his once hopeful future in the what's called the California educational system version of purgatory, which is called continuation. And then when he was there, he befriended a young autistic lad, a gentleman who is really good with numbers and maps. And this young man, using an ancient Greek mathematical formula, created a seven-sided antenna and intercepted communiques from the seventh dimension, and learned that the events that Zeke set into motion in that high school finals tipped the scales and caused the seventh dimension to decide to take the game away.
Okay. Don't tell anyone too much.
No. That's nothing. I'll leave it right there. And so,
but then the title though comes something in that title that refers to how infers to the journey of your protagonist here, isn't there?
Yeah, and it happens pretty late in the book. The title is actually derived from a line of dialogue from a prominent character towards the end of the book, mm-hmm. where they talk about how it wasn't about basketball, it was about friendship and doing the right mm-hmm. thing and redemption. And that line came out. And
right.
At the 11th hour, I had a different title in mind the whole time, and my editor said, we're going to do this instead.
Do you want to tell me?
The original title, which is the one I came up with, and I wrote the entire book with this in my head, was The Kid That Saved Basketball. And unfortunately, it violated a rule of titles, which is it gave the book away in the title.
So. Yeah, exactly. And you know what's funny about that kind of stuff, those kind of rules? Here's what's ridiculous to me about those. If you're right, I don't think anybody reads a book and doesn't know it's going to conclude in one of, you know, three or four ways that every good story concludes, right? I mean, that's just the Greek literature. It's a tragedy or it's a comedy, but we know something's gonna happen, the kid who say basketball, and the question would be like, well, how? There's still a million questions in that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, we can go into that, but like you said, we don't want to give away too much.
No, I know that, but I'm just saying, now I'm arguing with your editor.
Oh, yeah.
The kid who say basketball. And you know what? I don't like to provoke people. I don't like to just have arguments for the sake of arguments. But lots of times, most times, when people give me a suggestion or say something, number one, I want to make sure it's the source. You know, people who don't write books, or stuff like that, they're always filled with that's why you shouldn't give it to them, like, to read like a piece of it or something, even though the reader will never be a writer per se. But you know, because they're always going to give you advice. I don't like getting advice from someone who can't do something, you know. And there's always ways around. So if somebody like an editor says, well, you can't give it that title, because that means that gives it away. And to me, I'm going like, well, how does it give it away? I mean, if you just know that title, it means you say basketball. You don't want to know how? You don't care? Maybe saved basketball and killed baseball. Maybe there's so many things. I mean, okay. I'm just, you know, I got quirks about, I'm quirky about this stuff.
There's medication for that, I understand.
It's what?
I said there's medication for that, I understand.
Well, it's not strong enough, I'll tell you right now. This is Frank Attolo here with Craig Lehner, who you were hearing of. You've been on a bunch. You have a podcast?
No, sir, I don't.
It said podcasts. Oh, that's right. There was Jiggy Jaguar.
Yeah, the Jigster does. And what I do is sometimes when I do interviews, I'll get a hold of the MP3 and then edit it down and put it on my website under media. So I've got a handful of things on there, including, I think, 5 interviews with the Jigster.
That's a good idea. I mean, what to do? Having 5 interviews with the Jigster is not a good idea, but we wrestle a lot with it. But the Jig, so you've been on his show a bunch of times. But what the hell is he? How, beyond this book, what do you guys talk about?
Boy, whatever he wants to talk about, really, you know. I never know what he's going to say to me, so I really have to be on my toes.
All right. Well, then we can't promote him on that. Okay, so this book is out there, and you're promoting it, and you said you were working on a sequel. This is good, sequels, because, you know, publishers want series. They don't, you know, they're not crazy about this. You know, I got this one book here. It's wonderful. It's got to be long, and it's got to have a series to it these days. That's the catch. So is Ezekiel, when you said you're working on a sequel or what have you, Zeke in this? Is it characters, other characters in his world, or what?
Well, when you read that book, the first one, you'll see that I left the door a little bit ajar in the last chapter. And so I pick up exactly where it leaves off when I do the sequel. I set a word count goal of 60,000. I'm sitting around 24,000 right now. So I'm cruising along. The book is outlined and it's written. I just haven't written it yet. It's all in my head. And every single day, I just keep hammering away at it.
There's a lot of different. It's really tough to. I've read a lot of these. The Paris Review used to have interviews with. You remember? Do you know the Paris Review?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. Okay. It's a. It's kind of the, you know, the snobby literary thing that goes way back with what's his name? Who's the guy who? Who's Paper Lion guy? Who's that guy? Who's the guy?
Clinton?
Who? Yeah, Plimpton. Yeah, Plimpton was, I think, an editor at one time. Goes way back to this. It was, you know, kind of erudite New York Algonquin intelligentsia, academia, you know. The Paris Review has, and I think they're still online, or you can somehow get it, because I know it's still around. Interviews with all the famous writers. I mean, it goes way back to the 20s and 10s, and right? And I've read them all, and well, enough, not read them all, but I've read enough to realize that none of these people helped me in terms of how I write, that you really have to find your own way. And when you find your own voice, which is, you know, that's the earmark, When you're like, yeah, I found my voice, I know I could, I'm sorry, it's not what I wanted to be because I wanted to imitate this guy and I was influenced by this guy, but this is my voice, I'm stuck with it and I have to do it. But I found that all they did was tell me how they did it and that wound up not helping me at all. This is why I didn't like to read. I only read a couple of books on structure, and the best one I ever read on structure said, you want to learn how to write? Read the Greek classics in Shakespeare and learn the form and then go home. You know, that's it. It's all there. It's always going to be there. So I wanted it as simple as possible. I'm also very impatient, so I'm a bad learner. I'm not a quick, you know, I do rather than practice. I have a saying I've always said on this show, because I don't do anything for this show. I just come on, open the mic. I never rehearse, but I'm always prepared.
Yeah, it's a big difference there, Frank.
Right. And so I wound up isolated in this category of like, how do you do it? Well, how I do it, I can't tell you. You're never going to be able to do it. I do it the way I do it, and it works for me. You have to find how you do it, and it works for you. So now that you have an idea to go, is your work pattern, you feel it's going to be the same? In other words, you're going to sit down and write, and you're going to go, ah, here's what worked for me writing this first one. So I'm going to outline, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and the other thing. Because now it's different. You have the whole story, you have it in your head. And, right? And there's got to be surprises and things that are going to happen while you write. So,
yeah,
how do you handle book two as a writer?
Well, I try to prepare for it the same way I did the first time, which is right. get a night's sleep, have a cup of coffee in the morning, and there's this kind of energy thing that happens where everything kind of wells up in the middle of you and then works its way to the top. And then I start to get myself ready, and then I'll sit down 10:30 in the morning and I'll just go till either my wife says knock it off or maybe 5:30, 6 o'clock comes around.
Wow.
And the main way I do it is I just let the words kind of fly out on paper and not really judge them.
Right.
And then when I feel like I've written a chapter, like, okay, this is a scene that I've concluded, I'll go back and just drag a big comb through it maybe two or three times until they get in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. Then I keep going.
So he said that a good script and a good book is never written. It's always rewritten.
Yeah, for sure.
And, there are, all sorts of problems, with that. But, I got nothing I could say, no matter how much. And you've had experience in writing other things. Now, just journalism, decide to go into fiction, or did you keep a journal, or do you write ideas down? What's your history of, writing ideas and things and stuff that led you to, just journalism?
My writing was usually more professional, just on the corporate world, like writing newsletters and proposals and, you know, memos to departments and things like that.
Sure.
That's how I got my chops.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize how much that stuff helps. When I was writing jokes, for comedians and various people, on radio and what have you, you learn, this is well before Twitter. I mean, 140 characters, it's like, okay, I got it, bing, 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 bing. And those kind of things help you. Also, dialogue in fiction, right, is different, and yet it's important how people speak.
You got to make use of every word, too, because otherwise the reader's going to leave you. So the dialogue's got to be tight, and it's got to convey something. It's got to move the story along. You can't just say, hey, how you doing, in dialogue, because your reader's going to move on.
Yeah, I guess it's important, and that's probably where a lot of people get hung up because of the because of size. I mean, 60,000 people don't realize how much 60,000 words is what. I mean, that's just making it, right? 40 to 60,000 is just making it into the novel land, right? We're talking about an average of 101, whatever, 1,000 most books are big. So once in a while, someone has to say, how are you? But it's got to mean something at that particular point,
Right, exactly, yeah. Young adults are, they're around maybe 55 to 65,000 generally, the more popular ones.
That's pretty big. For kids, I think that's pretty big for 12 to 18, don't you think? I would think they'd be much smaller.
For sure. My first one checked in at 272 pages. That's a lot of words.
Yeah. Yeah, That's something. I mean, I'm just fascinated by young adults, committing to 60,000 word books. Yeah. I don't care how they're reading it. Kindles, Schmindles, phones, PDFs. The fact that they're reading it fascinates me that much. You know, there's that much because they live in a world where they, you know, they cut words up in order to text. I mean, you know, their language just changes. Did you find, when you were writing it, let's talk about that for a second. In terms of dialogue and stuff, where did you find the authenticity for people who are of an age in your book who, you know, you don't know or you don't talk like that with people? What influence did you use?
You know, I just follow my own instincts. I'm not around that many young adults that often in my career, in my life. You know, here and there, of course, but I just decided to write the way I thought it should sound, and rely on my editor to pull me up short if I were to go astray. So I don't know. It's just the inner voice comes out, and I try to make it sound like a kid at some level, but it's really just me talking.
That's fair enough. I don't have – there's – you know, I'm not trying to catch her. I'm just – you know, I'm just asking because, like I said – everybody doesn't different. So I've got a writer on. He says, I knew a guy who worked with the plot cards. You know, they used to sell these things called plot cards. It was a deck. It's like, even if you didn't have a story, it was like you'd write, you'd deal the cards out. It's kind of like, and you see, can you write a story with, you know, this is the plot, this is the place. It's almost like an improv. Have you ever been in an improv group? Have you ever done any theater?
I have not. Okay. We Just Grab Me sounds like a more adult version of Mad Libs.
Yeah, well, Mad Libs, oh boy, what, that was so brilliant. I forgot his name. He's an advertising guy. You remember him. Who created that? What was his name?
Is it Don Martin? Is that his name?
No, Don Martin is the Mad Magazine.
Okay, that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
I'm thinking of, he was an advertising guy, the guy who created Mad Libs. And, I'll look it up later. This, you know, the older you get, do you find this? The older you get, the more information is in your mind, and the longer it takes for your subconscious to shove it out when it's, you know, it's in there. But it's got to go look at it, and the files are so big now.
Not like it's called the earthly cycle of life, I think.
Is that it? Akuma Malata? What is it? Akuma Malata? No, that's not it. Whatever. That's the circle of life. So Craig, what you'd love to, can you see this thing being sold as, this is the next step, of course, can you see the rights being sold for some kind of another media, of the book, you know what I'm talking about? TV, cable, series, movies, what?
I have a friend who used to be my assistant when I worked at Disney. And he went on to become a pretty big time producer here around town. And, he liked the first book a lot. And he said, when you write the second one, that he thinks that we can talk to somebody like Netflix or Amazon and try to put a miniseries together.
See, son of a bitch. This is what I'm talking about with these people. you could give someone, the Sound and the Fury. And then they'll go to you, well, you know, how about the Sound and the Louder Fury? The next one you're going to write? Then I love this one, but. Can we? It's amazing. I love novellas. And I wrote a couple of them. And, they're good. People like them because, the attention span of people is, you know, so different than it used to be when there were not all the distractions of media. And I love novellas. I love to get right in that 20, you tie it all up by 30,000 words and it's beautiful. There's nothing wasted in it. But, you know, If you look in the history of publishing, there were a lot of great novellas, but now it's got to be longer. And I'm a little confused. I originally thought when I was writing, I said, write a short, tight book because people want to read. They got lives to lead. They don't want to get hung up with these gigantic books. James Patterson and the spy from this thing and the other guy and the monstrous stuff and the minutia and so. And yet it's the other way around. This is, to me, this is fascinating. I don't know. You really, so why would they say, it's like, oh, I got to see the next one. It's got to be, why? Because they don't want to take, I mean, I don't have an answer. I'm just squawking now.
Yeah, just a bit more material. You know, the way the book kind of ends, a lot of things get resolved, but a few things don't. And there's a lot of room there. So having more material means you got to have more episodes for a TV show.
Yeah. It's like, it wasn't always that way, Craig.
No. these new channels, you know.
Craig, it's like now it is amazing to think of the product they need. It's fascinating. There are stations I didn't even know were producing movies and series. I don't even know these, you know, I'm talking like Hulu and there's Skeeter and, where are all these streaming things? They all need material. And you know what they do? This is how hungry for material, the media and all the media, is at this point. The fact that they take other things and remake them and, you know, redo them. I heard there was a series, now I'm going to try to remember the name of them. There's a series called Get Shorty.
Okay.
And it was based on a bad movie. I don't know. This movie was no big deal, you know, but they said, let's take that and make it into a series and get a name. And they got who they thought was a name. The Raymond kid, that comedian, Ray Romano. And then he said, do this series based on that. Because why? You mean there weren't 1,000 people out there with 1,000 other ideas? I think there might have been. But think about it. It's hypocritical because here's one movie. Now they're going to have to make it a series and write it into a series. And they take this old, used, and not even very good, I'm sure many people would agree, story. It's like what they do with, it's like there's a big hit on Broadway now, Mean Girls. They make musicals out of movies. It used to be the other way around.
Yeah, there's a thirst for content.
Yes.
There's no end to it. That's why I actually shot. I should mention, I haven't mentioned this, to you yet, but in addition to the soft cover and the ebook on Amazon, there's also an audiobook that I directed as well.
You know, I did see that. I was going to ask you about that because I don't have any audiobooks. What was the deal with that? How did you put that together?
Man, I got real lucky. I used to work for this company. Actually, I was the president of the company for about 7 years, a company called My Eye Media. And after I left, a few years after that, the owner, a friend of mine named Michael Cadenacy, actually used to play in a band with him. He decided he wanted to build a studio, and he invited me to come in because he wanted to do audiobooks in there as well as music recording. And he said, come on in, let's do it. And he brought in an actor and an engineer, and we sat in there, and over a period of a couple of weeks, we put that thing together, and I think it sounds pretty good.
Now, is that a lot of editing?
Yeah, quite a bit. Sometimes, the actor, the kid, by the way, I mentioned his name, Josh Powers. He did 26 different voices. And this is a kid who is not from LA. He's from, Minnesota. And so he had to sort of alter his dialect. Not a basketball fan. I hadn't read the book.
Mm-hmm.
I printed out the script for him, highlighted some of the areas where the emotional passages were and things like that, handed it to him. He went into the booth, cleared his throat, read three sentences, and then hit the talk back button and said, how does it sound? I said, hey, man, keep going.
So you said
he recorded the whole thing over a period of 3 days.
You gave him a script.
Well, I printed the book out in larger type, so he could not have to bear down too much trying to read it.
Because all they do is read the book, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And, so I'm in the chair with the cans on, and whenever he hit a clam, I would say, let's try that again. And then the engineer recorded it all, and then he went back on his own afterwards and took out all the bad takes to kind of strung it together. He emailed me the MP3 files. I went through it and made some notes, gave it back to him. And then he and I sat down together, did a complete run through and kind of QC'd the whole thing and cleaned it up. And that was it.
Yeah, that's a whole, I've done recording and stuff like that, but that is a whole different, how did you choose him? How did that work?
The voice actor?
Yeah, finding a voice actor. I would imagine that would be go ahead.
Well, I had read that you're supposed to audition 25 or 30 actors for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of my friend, you know, offering to do this for me for gratis, he says, hey, I've got a young voice actor. It was, he was a kid who went to the acting school with his daughter. I actually knew who he was. And I had no expectation, and he came in and just nailed it. And so it just, I got lucky.
That's sure, sure. Hey, luck counts.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Tell people. Yeah, people have to know luck counts. And if you're a, who was it? I think Marshall Brickman said, and I'm sure he heard it somewhere else, luck is for the prepared. Luck works best for the prepared.
Yeah, well, he was right about that.
Right? That's a beautiful, yeah. That's a beautiful thing to say. And it, you know, and I know that's it. And you don't, if it's a rule that you find, you know, 12 people to, and you hear it in the first person, you have to, you know, go, hey, that's it. A lot of people don't do that. They say, no, I got to hear a whole bunch of people. I don't even know how you remember the, if you have 20 guys, how do you remember the first one? Just write, I guess they, you make a tape of it and go, after a while, doesn't it all sound the same?
Well, a lot of the adult authority figure voices, like the referee and the police, you know, they all kind of sound the same because they're sort of incidental to the story. But each of the main characters has their very own cadence and pitch in their voice. Kid was had a lot of talent. Boy, he was really something.
Because if you're reading a book, you don't necessarily have to go into the theatrics, do you? Are you reading a book? I guess that's just natural for an actor to do that.
But, yeah.
Right? Because you just read a book. You just read the words, right?
Yeah, it's just got talent, and he just picked it up. Had never read it before and was not a basketball fan. So I don't know how he pulled it off. And then we had to do a few retakes and stuff. But, you know, for the most part, well, he was right on it.
Cold copy. Cold copy.
Rip and read, right?
Yeah, definitely. Unbelievable. Well, Craig, we will be telling every time we have somebody on, we continue to mention throughout, you know, when it comes up, because I don't just tell people to go get my books. I say, hey, go get that book. And then don't forget him. So we'll do what we can, and I don't know what impact that would have. But certainly we have many listeners. We've been here since the beginning of time, as you know. Or don't you know? No, you don't know.
Actually, I did a little bit of research. I can see that.
Yeah. We do have lots, but we've been through a bunch of generations, which is weird. We've lost the audiences because they grew out and new audiences came in, and eventually there'll be no audience. That's just the life of everything. But, we will continue to tell everyone about this was, never about basketball. And, people will take notice because they know I am, you know, those sports guys, much as I know, did know. And we'll send them over to your website, and you know, and when things start get cooking again, you know, come on again, and we'll talk about, you know, the new one, or talk, you know, whatever you got. Yeah. I can't talk basketball. I don't know. I don't even know who's in. Are there playoffs? This is. I was telling everyone, so you were listening. So you know, this is the time of year where there's like what 4 major sports going on, right?
Everything's firing up. Hockey's now underway. Basketball starts just in a few weeks. See, it's coming together.
Basketball's...
Hey, I will make you a deal right now. If you want to send me a DVD copy of Tenacity and Gratitude, I'll send you a copy of my book.
Oh, the movie.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, that thing keeps popping up by people that I don't even remember. I had nothing to do with that other than I was the subject. Okay?
Okay. All right.
I only have like sample. I don't even have like a sellable copy. So I have his, and it's very long. But I will tell the guy who's out there. He's a stand-up comic. Do you know the Federal Bar? Is it called?
I know of it. I've never been inside.
Yeah, he plays there a lot.
Okay.
He's
you know,
guy.
If it's easier to send me one of your books, I would love to do that.
Okay. I'll get something for you.
Let's swap one.
And I can get it where?
Well, I'm saying if you have a book you can send me, I'll send you mine.
Yeah, well, you know, I send a link, right? That's how you do it with the digital books, right? Or do you want me to send it? Yeah, because you know, I have ones that are only digital.
Yeah, I'll send you an email. We'll set it up.
Okay, that's what we'll do.
Listen, I really appreciate it. I'm so grateful for your kindness and having me on and, you know, chewing the fat here.
Hey.
Chop up, as we say in the sports writing world.
There is, it's... You know, it's fine. It's good. Thank you for coming on. And let's just hope it does any good for you.
a good conversation, and that makes me a better writer and everything else along with that. I appreciate the time.
Well, thanks. That's great. And it helps me. Now I know this, you know, this new Skype really stinks, but it works.
Sounds okay on this end. We sound like Sammy and Frank right now as we're signing off, I think.
Sammy and Frank. Oh, I guess so. But yeah, I'll let you go because it's even early out there. You still have a whole night. You can have fun. Whatever you do and write some more. Thank you, Craig. Good to meet you and luck with it. And we'll do whatever we can to help you sell some copies. And we will talk to you again. Send me the email. You know, I told everybody, fcatolo@yahoo.com. Okay?
Got it.
And everybody knows because that's where people send me death threats too. So don't worry about it.
Thanks a lot, Frank.
Thank you. And good evening. Say hello to my, my favorite area of the United States out there, would you please?
I'll give everyone, Zucker, your best as well.
Oh, yes. Thank you. And good night.
Good night.
Craig? Oh, you see, now that was a little, it wasn't as loud or, the sounds are different. Craig Leener, L-E-E-N-E-R. The book is, you know what's funny? Of course, a lot of things, Frank. What? He said, send me a copy of Tenacity and Gratitude. And I'm, right? Is that the name? Is that even the name of it? Tenacity? And I'm going, what is he talking about? I've forgotten there's this documentary, which, documentary. It's a series in itself. I think it's like four DVDs, like, right? Whatever. Wait, you know? I don't know. But, and I'm going, what? So he said he did some research. So he found that. Jeremy Long's documentary. And use me as a subject for that documentary. But when he said it, I'm going like, what is he talking about? I don't even remember it. Oh, boy. And here I am, the bard of broadcasting. And after a while, it just all piles up. I'm a pilot. I pilot here. I pilot there. My name is Frank Atolo. Man's name is doing the title of the show. Don't you forget if you have forgotten or if you never heard. The archives of this show can be streamed, downloaded, urinated on, or anything you want to do at juicedtalk.com. Cthulhu Chronicles, it says right there. The blog is at cthulhuchronicles.blogspot.com, but the blog in itself, which is just a writing blog with funny stuff, you be the judge if it's funny. Maybe crappy stuff. 148.ca/Frank. And then you could find a whole bunch of other junk from me, by me, or whatever, if you just Google or Bing my name, Google my name, Yahoo my name. What's the other one? Jeeves. No one uses Ask Jeeves my name. And you'll find a whole bunch of other stuff if you care to do that. And Amazon, of course, for books. Blurb.com for books, both in digital. Blurb has digital and analog. So does Lulu.com. I was going to, and I'm not going to, because I'm not going to stretch out 10 minutes that I don't have to. We'll talk about other stuff other times. I just leave that stuff. It's not important. I think we did the crux of the show, the nucleus of the show, because the crux, I just felt like there was someone behind me. It's just weird, huh? It's like a shadow. Now, you know what? Skype is what? How do you quit Skype? You don't know. Close, minimize, move, close. Close. Okay, I close it, but it's still somewhere, it's still open. How do you quit Skype? And you know what? The last time I quit it, here's quit Skype, tasks. Let me quit it. Okay, so it's quit now. Now, the next time I did that once before, and the next time I opened it, the window came up and says, do you want to put this on your computer? For gosh sakes, it's on. It's there. It shows it. I'll never be satisfied with instructions like these. My name is Frank Atolo. My name is doing the title of the show. You know where the blogs are and everything, and that's what we'll do. And we'll keep you in touch with anything that goes on. In the meantime, we'll do this. Because, you know, why? Well, no, there's no reason to stretch it, you know? Stretch it out. We had it okay with Craig. Craig, less, leaner. I was gonna listen. Thank you, Craig. Women's basketball, they're gonna look that up just for, just to know something a little bit better. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you may be located, and you can get that novel. It is a novel, 101,000 plus words, licensed to Skill. That's over at Amazon. Boy, that's loud, isn't it? All right. Okay. There we go. I think the mice are running around here. So, be good or be bad, do whatever it is you do, but come back when you can, and we'll tell you. Remember, our mystery guest is going to be here. That person is going to be here in the weeks to come. Happy autumn. And that's what happens. Here's the theme. Here's the rest of the theme that goes on as I stop, because I have nothing more to say.